You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
I just really wanted to put like a lot of color on this quote unquote black and white canvas that people always seem to have in their minds when they think about East Germany.
This is Cold War Conversations. If you're new here, you've come to the right place to listen to first-hand Cold War history accounts. Do make sure you follow us in your podcast app or join our emailing list at coldwarconversations.com. Welcome to episode 37 of Cold War Conversations. Today we're talking to Antje Arnold, the author of The Girl Behind the Wall, which tells the story of a girl growing up in East Germany in the 1980s. Now, keep your finger away from that fast forward button for a minute. Hopefully, some of you may have noticed the improvement in sound quality on some of the recent episodes. And this is directly resulting from the support we get from our Patreons, where we have invested in some new microphones. Now, you might be thinking, what is this Patreon he keeps going on about? Well, it's an easy way for you to support the podcast with a monthly donation of as little as a euro, a dollar, a quid. Larger amounts and other currencies are also accepted, but I'm afraid we don't take Ostmarks. I'd like to thank personally our latest supporters via Patreon. These are Dom Thorrington, Jakob Rud Bernhardt, and Nick Packham. If you'd like to help us and get some extras, just go over to coldwarconversations.com and click on the Support the Podcast option. Now, back to today's episode. This book offers a very different insight into holidays, vacations, and the everyday life of a family. Stories that are often left out when describing East German life. So, I'm delighted to welcome Antje Arnold. Can you just tell me a little bit about the book? Obviously, we've got a few things we want to go into, but just a very brief outline of The Girl Behind the Wall.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the book was originally, actually, I wrote it for my children, and I wanted them to have like a first person perspective of what it was like to grow up behind the wall in East Germany, because, you know, we hear a lot of times more or less of like the adult point of view from that time period. And when you look now, any kind of documentaries on the television, most of the time you really hear about, you know, all the struggles and people trying to escape and the depression and oppression of the people. And I really wanted to provide a sort of a different perspective on things and sort of open the door a little bit to my home. So I really wanted to do that for my children, of course, primarily, but I was approached by a lot of co-workers and friends and some family members who suggested I should just kind of consolidate them all and all of my little stories and put them together in a book. So that's really how this all came about.
Fabulous. Well, we're delighted that you have put them together as a book. And I think you're right. There's a lot of focus on the Stasi and people trying to escape. But one of the areas that I'm particularly interested in is what, you know, regular life was like in the DDR, which from what I've read of your book, that's sort of what you're describing there.
Yes, indeed. It's really, truly sort of a naive perspective, leaving out, you know, any kind of like political agenda or, you know, kind of going sort of behind the scenes of the usual maybe headlines during that time period. So I really wanted to sort of really provide a different perspective, totally stripped away from all the news headlines and propaganda maybe that people might have heard around that time period. And I just really wanted to put like sort of a lots of color on this quote unquote black and white canvas that people always seem to have in their minds when they think about East Germany.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So where were you born?
So I was born in a town that's called Strausberg. It kind of means like ostrich on a hill. So I have no idea if there were actually some day in time. I don't know if there were ever any ostriches in that area. I don't know, but that's what it's called. But it was really it's a city, but I think it had only about maybe 10,000, 15,000 people living there at the time. And it's actually located sort of central between Berlin and Poland. So it was okay. about 30 kilometers each way.
Yeah, I'm sure I saw it as a destination on the S-Bahn at some point. did it go out that far?
It actually did.
Oh, well, there you go. There you go. And what year were you born in?
I was born in 1978.
And who was there in your family?
So my family was quite small compared to maybe what would be considered the regular size family. So it was really just my brother and my parents. Both of my parents were orphanage, they both grew up in an orphanage, different ones throughout their lives, and they kind of met actually at one that they stayed at together. There was some sort of family members, like my mom's grandmother and my dad's grandmother, but it was really just the four of us, essentially.
Right. Okay. And was your brother older than you or younger than you?
Yeah, he's actually 3 years older than me.
Okay. And what did your parents do for work? What was their job?
So my dad, actually, he learned to be like, I don't know how you say it. It's you know, with piping and
plumber,
water.
A plumber.
Yeah, like a plumber. Yep. And but he ended up in the end being like a logger. So he was like chopping down trees and so forth. And then he joined the NVA, like the army, the East German army, because his goal essentially was to serve for about 10 years. And then after 3 years, I guess he didn't quite like it anymore and got out of it and went to school to become a police officer. And my mom, she studied to be a nurse, but then discontinued her studies because she became pregnant with my brother and then started working in a daycare center. And then later on did a couple other jobs here and there.
Okay. And did your parents, were they fans of the regime? Did they believe in, you know, what the, you know, the government line in East Germany?
That's a quite difficult question to answer, to be honest with you. Well, my dad, when he joined the army, he also joined the SED, like the party.
Yeah.
Even though we didn't have any like special privileges by him joining the army, it actually quite surprised me when I found out about that he did, because he is not a very good conformist of any sort. So I don't remember him ever going to any meetings. He wasn't really involved. I'm not sure if that was a requirement for him to join the party or whatnot, but I'm not really sure what they thought about the regime at the time. I mean, it was very like hush hush because you couldn't really voice your opinion because you never knew who was listening in. So that was always quite difficult.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And what sort of, he was in the Volkspolizei, was he, as a police officer?
Yes, he was.
And was he in any particular branch of that? Was he traffic or a regular beat cop? Or?
No, he was kind of more of your police, like town police officer.
Okay.
He was like the police officer for several small towns in our area where we later on moved to. So.
All right. So, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Was there much crime that he'd have to deal with?
Yeah, I don't really recall him ever having to deal with any big sort of crime scenes. I mean, I would say the most he had to maybe deal with were just minor, you know, misunderstandings between neighbors, that sort of thing. But it wasn't, you're correct in that assessment that there wasn't really much crime going on.
Yeah. And your mother, you said, worked in, was it child daycare?
Yes, that was correct.
Okay. And obviously that was very, very heavily subsidized by the government. What sort of size of daycare center was she working in? And what were her responsibilities?
So usually the daycares back in the day, they had sort of the really sort of infant kids on one side of the building, and then the older ones, meaning like the ones that were about, you know, like 3, 4, 5 years old on the other side. But it was a big building kind of with two halves. And then a huge playground on the back end of it. And she actually worked on the side with the really small children. She was basically like the teacher, so to speak, of the little kids, kind of taking care of them throughout the day and, you know, doing whatever activities with them.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've seen some great photos where the kids are sort of being pulled around on trailers.
Yes, I know. Those are great, though. Those are really great.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you, I mean, did you attend the same daycare center?
Yeah, actually, I did. My brother, however, he attended a separate one. But because when I was born, I had like several different health problems. And I got sick a lot. And the only way that they would allow me to go to kindergarten was if I was going to go to the one where my mom was working at. So I was essentially on the other side of the building, but, you know, on the same grounds as my mom.
Just want to go back a bit before we talk about your sort of early childhood. Where were you living at the time? Were you in a flats or in a house, or where were you?
Yep, we lived in a two-bedroom, well, I guess it was more like a one-bedroom flat because my brother and I shared essentially the one bedroom, and my parents had like a pull-out couch. So every day they had to, you know, put the couch out, make a bed, and then in the morning I had to all put it back together again as a couch for the daytime. So it was a one-bedroom apartment.
Yeah, what we'd say is very cozy.
Yes, indeed. Very much.
And what were the neighbors like?
You know, it's funny because I think we lived on the third story, and there was one more neighbor above us. And you know, when you came into the entrance, there basically was two neighbors across from each other. So we didn't really interact with a whole lot of them. So out of the, let's say, eight people essentially living there, we only really interacted with two neighbors, really. So, I mean, you said hello when you saw them in the hallway or something, but other than that, it wasn't really a lot of interaction.
Okay. So you go to kindergarten. What are your memories of kindergarten?
I have actually a lot of really positive, more positive than negative memories, but nap time was my least favorite memory, really. I was not very obedient when it came to nap time, but we did a lot of, arts and crafts and that sort of thing. And of course, the pre-school entry type of education. So you knew how to count and your colors and your shapes and that sort of thing. So we always had about 2 lessons maybe each day on that sort of preschool type of education. But a lot of the other activities were really sort of focused on nature-based type of thing. So we learned how to build things. We learned how to garden. We had to sort of clean up all together. So it's a very community type of things. And of course we had, our holiday celebrations and we actually had a forest that was adjacent to the daycare center. So we did lots of ventures out yeah. in the forest.
That sounds lovely. Almost idyllic.
Yes.
And what age did you start school properly then in East Germany? What age was that?
It was the age of 6. I was initially my parents, I guess, were confronted that I should start school at the age of 5, but my mom decided against that and said, no, she's going to be going to school with everybody else at the age of 6. So basically 6 is really the starting age when you get to go to school for the first time.
And can you remember your first day?
Oh, yes. Yes, I did. We have this kind of celebration. It's usually on a Saturday. So you have sort of your introduction to your teachers and the school itself on a Saturday. And we had these huge paper cones that you are giving on your first day of school. And they're kind of filled with, chocolates and candy and then some school supplies and maybe a toy or something. But it's supposed to make the entry into the school system, I guess, a little bit more enjoyable. And so I don't know. I don't want to say that it's necessarily like an East German type of thing only, because I believe that it's still done today. Where they give out those type of things on the first day of school, if I'm correct. But it was I was looking forward to it because I only got to experience it through my brother, 3 years earlier. So I was looking forward to getting my big cone full of goodies.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I've seen photos of those, actually. It's unlike anything that happens in the UK. I mean, in the UK, you basically just go there and that's it. You don't get a cone full of sweets or anything like that. And also our schools are closed on Saturday. It's just Monday to Friday. And I've noticed that Germany is Monday to Saturday, isn't it?
Yes. So before the wall came down, we had to go to school from Monday through Saturday. Saturday was usually a shorter day. So we had we only had about 4 classes on Saturday so that we would basically be home again just in time for lunch.
Right. Okay. Okay. And what lessons were you doing in those first years at school?
So, your regular, German, reading, writing. There was a lot of emphasis on writing very neatly, and you had to use your actual the ink and the jars with the feather pen, and had to not make a mess on your papers, And then just sort of geography classes and some sort of history. I recall a little bit of that. And then in fifth grade, actually, we had to learn Russian as well. So I learned that in fifth grade. But we had like the whole music and arts type of classes as well.
Okay. Because I've sort of seen examples of East German textbooks.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Of sort of primary school age, and there appears to be quite a lot of, you know, about fraternal relations with the Russians, and also how important the NVA is. How early were you aware of that sort of message being put across to you?
Very early on. I mean, they always told us, even still in kindergarten, they always told us that, you know, the Soviet, you know, they're our friends, and you know, like they kind of taught us that they were not just our friends, but they were sort of equal, you know, we shouldn't look at them any like differently than we look at ourselves. So there was a lot of that. And as far as the Volkspolizei, it was kind of, you know, like the whole army and all that, it was all sort of like taught to sort of respect them and follow the rules, and how important it is to follow the rules and not, you know, sort of challenge authority in any sort of way. So it was a very subtle sort of teaching approach, but it was always there at the forefront, including like you mentioned, like, you know, in our textbooks, there was always pictures of you know, people in uniform, or Soviet, you know, like children and that sort of thing. So it was always sort of, we were always surrounded by it, and it was always taught in a way that don't pay too much attention to this, just do what they say and move on, kind of thing.
Yeah. And with your father being in the Volkspolizei, did that affect any of your friendships at school at all?
It didn't early on. Like later, it kind of affected it more, because you know, some people didn't want to be friends with me because of my dad's profession. You know, they didn't. I don't. Like they were scared, you know, maybe if they were going to be reported on or spied on or something like that. I don't know. But the main thing was always, I always felt like we were more closely watched because of it. So so it always was, you know, don't turn this channel on. And if the doorbell rang, you either had to either change a channel, because we did, you know, have, you know, Berlin wasn't, I mean, you know, wasn't that far away. So we still got signals from the West. Yeah. And so when somebody rang the doorbell, you were like, oh my God, so either turn off the TV or change the channel real quick. And so, because you never knew who was going to be on the other side of the door. So there was a lot of like self-checking, you know.
Yeah. Okay. I was gonna ask you about that in a moment. Just back with your school days. What was your favorite subject?
I actually had two, and so my favorite was gym class, and my other one that I really liked was shop class.
What class?
Yeah, shop, like you learn how to learn like practical things, like you learn how to build something, and so it's like a shop class, like where we learn how to build like a birdhouse or make a shovel or something like that.
Right. And what were your favorite books?
I honestly loved mostly like fiction books, like any kind of fantasy books, comic books. But fantasy books were probably my favorite. I actually still have one, my really, really early favorite books. I still have to this day, which my mom got from a person. She knew her. She worked. She was the bookstore owner, I guess. And she always got special books to us. And it was like about a panda, like a Chinese family adopting a panda bear, and then how they healed the bear and had to send it all back into the forest again after a while. So, but yeah, it's a lot of fantasy books. I don't know, like the Grimm's tales and that sort of thing. So
yeah,
nothing.
all that cheerful East German
yes.
stuff. No, and what about TV shows? What did you like to watch on TV?
You know, there were actually some great movies that they came up with. I think even. You know, like a lot of there were most of them were from like there were, you know, Russian kind of movies, you know, like from I don't know, like Father Frost and I guess like lots of I don't know. Some of them were a little bit creepy. There was one that was like a witch. I think it was like a witch that lived in a house that had chicken legs and it would move around and things like that. But there were a lot of
yeah, no that's what I've found with a lot of these TV shows is they are a bit, how can I say, disturbing, let's say.
Yes.
for a young kid. I mean, if regular listeners to the show will know that I've mentioned before The Singing Ringing Tree.
Oh, yes.
Which
yes.
was shown on British TV. and that really freaked me out watching that. So if your TV had more shows like that, I'm surprised you've managed to come through your childhood.
I know. Yeah, they were sort of like that, a lot of them. And but we had our own sort of... we had a music program, so it was like a variety program show. So people, you know, singing, and there we had sort of our East German, you know, teen musical type of movies. So, but I did watch a lot of kids shows, like sort of like the stop motion type of shows, and of course. The Sandmännchen, like the, you know, put you to sleep at the end of the day. So.
Yeah. No, you can't mention East German TV without mentioning that. Absolutely. And so what would have been your favorite shows on West German TV?
Oh, West German TV. I don't even remember when I was growing up. Like, I was trying to look back in my head, like, did I watch... Like, what did I actually watch? There were West German shows, and I don't recall really watching any of them until about very shortly before the wall came down. I was staying over at my friend's house, and they put MacGyver on their TV, and that was the first time I think I've ever seen sort of like an action type of, you know,
yeah,
TV, like show, and I was so excited about it.
Yeah, so you never watched, what was it, Polizei Anruf 110 or whatever it was? What was that? There was that cop show that was on East German TV. Did you ever watch that?
I think my parents did, but like, you know, it's kind of weird because we watched the Sandmännchen that came on, I want to say about quarter to six, you know, in the evening, and then that was our last show to watch TV.
Yeah.
And then we had to go to bed because we had to get up like at 5 o'clock in the morning. So my parents might have watched that show that you're referencing, but I have not.
Yeah, I can imagine your dad watching it and saying, "Oh no, we don't do it like that."
Probably.
I'm presuming you were a member of the Young Pioneers.
I was actually, yeah. My brother and I both were. I think most kids were part of that. I think I want to say it wasn't necessarily like mandatory, but it was highly encouraged for you to join. So I did join the Young Pioneers, and then later had the whole ceremony to become a Tailman Pioneer. And then, you know, I was really looking forward to getting my blue shirt later on when I was going to be like 15 or 16, I think.
Yeah.
But that never happened.
But unfortunately, history denied you that.
I know.
And how did you find the Young Pioneers? I mean, what can you remember from it?
Well, we had a lot of sort of get-togethers in the school courtyard. Like, there were certain days that we had to show up to school in uniform and kind of had an assembly in the schoolyard. And it was a lot of community, like, solidarity type of, you know, working on behalf of the community type of stuff. So we had, like, fundraisers by, you know, selling baked goods, or we went through the entire town gathering recycling things and to earn money for the class, and you know, cleaning up, you know, type of community, cleaning any trash up and stuff like that. But we always, I think it was on Wednesdays that we had to come to school for our meetings for like an hour or two every Wednesday, so that we did different things. And there was always like a, you know, like once a year we had to send a package to Africa or something like that, where we had to gather school supplies and so forth. So that was so it was like those type of things. So it was very like a community type of thing. Like, you know, I always joke with people because I always say this is like the post Hitler youth type of thing, because that's what it felt like. There was like a lot of emphasis on you know, working, yeah, together as a group and that sort of, yeah, thing.
Well, it certainly looked like that uniform wise I mean, it was, yes, just a different color uniform and a different colored scarf. And did you have any relatives in the West?
I did. Well, my great aunt, she moved during, you know, the regime. She moved over to West Berlin, and I want to say her daughter was actually she lived over in West Berlin and was like the secretary for like a mayor in the city or something like that.
Right.
And so my great aunt, she did move over there to Neukölln. So that, as far as I knew, that was like, you know, that was the only person over in West Germany that, okay, that I was related to.
Mm-hmm. And did she send any gifts over or anything like that at Christmas or birthdays?
Yeah, we did get you know, a couple packages from her, and it was always, you know, you were always kind of worried about that because obviously you didn't know when it was necessarily coming. But then, you know, you had to always hope that they didn't open it. And, you know, it was always like packed very tightly. It was, you know, like they used not the tape that we use nowadays, but it was like the, you know, like the yarn. It was like wrapped like really tightly in hopes that nobody could get in it and take anything out and that sort of thing. So
yeah.
And
could you remember anything in particular that you got from one of those packages? Anything memorable?
I remember receiving you know, gummy bears, the Haribo gummy,
yeah,
bears.
Yeah, yeah. No, I my kids still eat them.
Yeah, and I remember it was like so excited because the smell of it like was so unlike I've ever, you know, smelled any kind of candy like that before, so that was very exciting for me. And yeah, some just chocolate, but I think it was like Kinder chocolate. And and, you know, I remember there was maybe some soap in there or something, bar soap for my mom, and coffee. It was like a different kind of coffee that my parents were very excited about getting that. So
Right. Yeah. No, I remember speaking to somebody else on the podcast, and they said that they chopped up a Mars bar and made it last a month or something like that.
Wow.
But no, that's really interesting, particularly you describing the difference in the smell of it, yeah, as well, because that doesn't, you know, that's a really interesting insight, because you don't necessarily think of that.
Yeah, I was like obsessed with it. So when my bag was empty, I would actually pack my sandwiches for lunch in that bag, because I was like hoping it would like taste like it.
That's great. That does really bring it home, though. I mean, that's a great description there. You mentioned about the worry of somebody knocking at the door and discovering you're watching West German TV.
Mm-hmm.
Were you sort of told what not to say outside of the family circle by your parents?
They didn't really have, you know, they didn't sit us down and like really like lay it out, kind of like, oh, you know, this is what you can do and this is what you cannot do and say and not say. It wasn't anything like very specific, but you know, it was I don't know, my parents didn't like really have this like conversation with us kids, but they were just making it very general and saying, okay, you know, if we're not really allowed to do this, so if somebody's coming, you know, turn it, don't turn it on if we have visitors, don't. It was more or less told to us that it was just not allowed, we weren't allowed to do that, you know, like they could take us away or something like that, and so that in itself was scary enough, and I was like, okay, I'm not gonna do that.
Yeah,
you know, so it was kind of surreal, you know, to have that. I was actually once in a summer camp, and I didn't know at that time that we were watching, they were showing the movie E.T. during summer camp, and I didn't know that we weren't really supposed to see that. I didn't know that it was something from the West, but I remember going back to school and not talking about it, but we had to write an essay or something about what we did. I forget, like it was an essay we had to write, and I sort of incorporated some of what I seen in the movie into a little bit into my story. And I remember a couple of teachers later on pulling me aside, asking me about like, where did I get this from? And it kind of made me really nervous, because I was like, oh no, what did I do wrong? You know? And I was so afraid that I just, you know, I was lying basically. I was like, oh no, I just made this up. I don't know what you're talking about. And that was like sort of the first time I was realizing, oh, that I was not allowed really to see that, but you know, everybody else in camp saw it. So it was, that was probably one of the scariest moments that I encountered, you know, as a child, being like sort of, you know, had somebody had their thumb on me and say, okay, what did you do wrong now? You know, so that was different.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's difficult to imagine that sort of pressure as a young child, sort of having that fear in the back of your mind that, you know, that you might be separated from your parents because of something you've said.
Hi, this is Rhonda in Virginia, and I support Cold War Conversations because I think the work that Ian is doing is critically important. I think it's vital to record the firsthand accounts of people who lived and experienced the Cold War, because it illustrates history in a way that a book never can. So thank you so much for the podcast. It's my favorite podcast, and I look forward to it every week.
To be like Rhonda and help to preserve these incredible stories of the Cold War, as a monthly or annual supporter, you'll be able to listen ad-free, you'll become one of our community, get the sought-after Cold War Conversations drinks coaster as a thank you, and you'll bask in the warm glow of knowing that you're helping to preserve Cold War history. Just go to coldwarconversations.com/donate to find out more.
Right, exactly.
I'm presuming that wasn't a young pioneers camp that they were showing E.T. at.
No, it was just like a regular like summer camp, you know, like people from all over the East Germany were basically, you know, able to go to the camp if you got a spot, I guess.
Yeah.
I actually didn't even like the movie. So I wasn't like all that impressed by it, but apparently I don't know. I don't ever. I actually, it would be interesting to know if these people actually got in trouble for showing it or not. I don't know, but I didn't know at that time. I wasn't supposed to see it. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, a number of Western movies were shown in the GDR, but not sure about E.T. have to research that further. I presume you visited East Berlin as a child.
I did. Yes.
What did you make of East Berlin?
I loved it. I was always very excited to go. And maybe it's because we lived in the country. You know, after we moved out of the flat, we actually lived in a much, much smaller town. And it was very, very country-like. I mean, there was only like 2,500 people living there. So it was going to Berlin was so exciting for me because I loved just seeing all the activity in the city and being able to go. My favorite thing was always to go to the grocery store in Berlin because they had a lot of things that we didn't have in our little small town. So that was always exciting for me that I got to go there and just look around at the city life.
Yeah. So did you go in the Centrum department store on Alexanderplatz? Was that one of your, one of your favorite places, was it?
Yes, it was. It was definitely one of my favorites, you know, riding the elevator and that sort of, it was, I guess for a child, just really exciting because it was so night and day to my regular daily routine. So it was, you know, it was really, really fun, especially around Christmas when the markets are open and things like that. So,
yeah. Presumably you went up the Fernsehturm to them?
I did. I only went once, but I was really excited about it because everything looked so small and, you know, all the cars looked like little ants to me. It was very exciting to be up there and kind of seeing the city from bird's eye view. So, yeah.
Yeah. You were 11 years old when the wall falls. How did you become aware of that happening?
Yeah. So I actually, you know, went to school with my brother and on a Saturday. And I think it was a Saturday and there was nobody there. There was like nobody there. There was like a couple teachers, a couple other students, but nobody else. And that's sort of, you know, the teacher that were there, they were like, okay, you just, you know, go home. You know, the wall came down type of thing. And so it was, I didn't really know exactly what that meant. And you know, I always look back that there might have been some differences in of the awareness of it, depending on if you lived really close to the border being like the wall being sort of in your face on a regular basis versus like living out in the boondocks, you know, and not really seeing that all the time. So my dad wasn't even home. He was, you know, I think he was still like doing something at the police school and that sort of thing. And my mom was working at the army at that time, and so she wasn't really aware of it either. So in a way, it was like a surprise to all of us in a way. But I know some of my friends' parents were apparently right on top of that, apparently because they didn't show up at school that day.
Yeah.
So I don't know if my parents like sort of decided to not pay attention to a lot of the news and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But But basically, you know, my brother and I broke the news to my mom.
Wow. And how did she react to that?
You know, I think that there was sort of like a confusion and maybe not like really finding that to be true. Like, you know, do we believe that? Do we not believe that? So it there's a lot in the air. I felt like, you know, is this for real? Is this temporary? What do we do? Because the other thing, what happened was that, you know, we, like my mom, and they were told to not go to West Berlin or West Germany because, you know, they were still working for, you know, like the Volkspolizei and the army, and you weren't allowed to do that, you know. So there was a lot of hesitation, confusion, and sort of things, and I'm like, well, if my parents are confused, then I have no idea what's going on.
So. Yeah. What was your mum doing with the army then? Because she'd obviously moved on from the daycare.
Yeah. So yeah, when we moved to the country, she was working first in a hair salon, but she didn't earn a lot of money there, so she decided to go and work at the army, in next town over, and it was basically just working at the like at the cafeteria area.
Right. Okay.
And yeah, but it was apparently above there was a bunker there, like, so people would disappear for like 2 weeks at a time.
Right.
Underground. So yeah, it was interesting.
Oh, okay. And so when did you first visit West Berlin? How long was it after the wall had come down?
I believe we went to West Berlin towards the end of November. Yeah, it was the end of November. I don't know. My parents were like, oh, you know, let all the crazy people go over first, yeah. get it out of their system type of thing. And maybe it was also just because there was still some like disbelief about it. So maybe uncertainty that made them wait a little bit longer compared to some other people. But we did, my dad drove the Trabant to Lehrte Bahnhof, which is, I think, now the central station in Berlin. So we went there and then took the S-Bahn to Kurfürstendamm, and then went to a bank there to get our 100 marks.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that was the end of November. So that was my first time in West Berlin.
And what were your first impressions of West Berlin?
You know, I was very, very overwhelmed. It was, you know, it was almost too much. Like, it was like this sort of like, quote unquote, the land of like milk and honey, you know, like it was like everything that I've never seen before that I didn't even know existed. And it was a lot of information overload. Like it was pure, I don't know, it was just the colors everywhere, and the advertisements, the products that you could buy just in a regular like grocery store. And it was very, very overwhelming for myself, like just seeing all those things that I didn't even know what they were half of the time.
Yeah. Yeah. So did you go in the KaDeWe department store? And was that like I'm presuming that was like a sensory overload for you?
Oh, absolutely. Very much so. I actually would compare it to the U.S. version of Black Friday. I mean, it was like people everywhere just trying, like buying, you know, everything left and right. And but anyway, yeah, it was definitely a lot of sensory overload for me. I was just kind of stepping back a little bit and just watching everything from the distance a little bit.
Yeah. And did you go and visit your great aunt in Neukölln?
Yeah, we not that particular day, but later on, like maybe like a couple of weeks or so later, we did go visit her. My right. mom and I did, yeah.
Well, that must have been something. Because did she travel over to see you at any point, or was that the first time your mom had seen her in quite a while?
She did come and visit us one time in East Germany, and it was actually my brother and I were home by ourselves, and she told us, I think she told us we couldn't tell our mom that she was there. And then, you know, my mom came home from work and my aunt was kind of like hiding behind the door. But my mom had sort of this look of suspicion on her face because I don't know. I guess it goes back to like the whole sensory thing. But my mom actually said that it was smelling different in the apartment, like something smelled different. And that's when my aunt, like, she jumped out from behind the door as a surprise. So wow. it's kind of funny, like, you know, that one single person could be that apparent that, you know, it smelled all of a sudden differently yeah. in the home.
Yeah, no, that's a great description. Now, I know that this is the first book that you've written, and I think you're going to write a further book of sort of like after your life after the wall has come down. Is that correct?
Yes. So the second book, but basically kind of, and you know, it's really my personal perspective, obviously, because, you know, it, you know, is obviously different for everybody depending on where you lived at that time and so forth. But I really, you know, wanted, basically going to cover what it was really like for me and some of my friends to like the aftermath of it, because a lot of times when you see again documentaries on the television, you see like, oh, this big celebration of all these people standing on the wall and in front of the wall and that hacking away at it and so forth, and you know, this whole celebration, but then nobody talks about really what happened after that. That's sort of like the, you know, that perfect fairy tale story, like, you know, and they live happily ever after, but we don't really care what happens after that.
Yeah.
So that's basically what this book is going to be, you know, what actually all the transitions of things and what happened and how they happened. So yeah.
Right. Well, we definitely want to have you back on the show to talk about that, because it's an area I'm particularly interested in, is how people coped with that transformation of their country effectively disappearing overnight. So we will talk again about that. But one last question I had for you was,
sure.
Because obviously your book, The Girl Behind the Wall, is about your childhood in the DDR. What would you say are your fondest memories of your childhood?
You know, I would say just sort of the sense of community in a way. Like, everybody was sort of equal. Like, you know, I never had to worry about somebody being better than me or trying to live up to some sort of expectation, and it was sort of more safe. It was safe, you know. I could ride my bike 6 kilometers that way or that way, and never had to worry about anything. So it was sort of like a safe environment to grow up in. And again, you know, this is obviously my perspective of it, versus if maybe it would be different if I would have been older or an adult and so forth. But, you know, besides all the worries of maybe people spying on you or kind of having to censor yourself a lot of times, I have a lot of good, positive memories of growing up in East Germany. So it was a lot of, like I said, a lot of like community aspect and a safe environment.
Okay. No, thank you for that. So where can people get your book, Anja?
So you can get it actually on Amazon. So it's available on all the Amazon sites, you know, Amazon.com or .de or .uk, wherever people are. So, but yeah, and it's available as an ebook or as a, you know, print book. So, but that's where everybody can get it.
Right. Well, I'll make sure there's some links in the show notes to the book there. But look, I really appreciate your time. That's been really interesting talking to you.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, that's it for episode 37. Don't forget to check out the show notes where there's links to buy Ancha's book and a few other extras as well. The show notes are at coldwarconversations.com/episode and the number 37. Don't forget, if you want more GDR podcast listening, GDR Radio is going to be available soon via your podcast provider. You can find them on Facebook. If you like what you're listening to, do join our Facebook discussion group where there's loads of Cold War information and further discussions with our listeners and guests. Just search for Cold War Conversations. We're also on Twitter at Cold War Pod. Lastly, if you like what you're hearing, do leave reviews with your podcast provider or share us via social media. It really helps to increase awareness of the podcast. Thank you very much for listening and supporting us. It is really appreciated. Goodbye. Not enjoying the ads? Well, you can avoid them by going to coldwarconversations.com/donate. By becoming a monthly or annual supporter, you'll enjoy ad-free listening, become a part of our community, receive the sought-after Cold War Conversations drinks coaster, and bask in the warm glow of knowing that you're helping to preserve Cold War history. Just go to coldwarconversations.com/donate for more information.